stabbed in incredible, warm, giving, radical lawyer, died March 14th. Dave was an immigration and criminal defense attorney who was really in it for the cause, defending people with little funds. During the 91 volleyball riots in People's Park in Berkeley, he was always there, willing to help with legal actions and defend people in court. Later, he moved to rural Washington, where he continued lawyering for the little guy. Lynn started working with the Peace and Freedom Party in the 1980s. And turn my mic all the way up. Okay. In the 1980s, wrote Hilda Rangel. Oh, I'm reading from the Slingshot Summer Edition. Of course, March 14th, Dave Lynn, I can't say my attorney. He qualified me as an expert witness in police brutality in a trial of a minor, so I can't find the thing online, but basically she had her arm twisted behind her back up to her neck, and which I showed the jury, or no, the judge, it was just a, yeah, and I said, well, I took nurse aid training, I know that range of motion stops when pain starts, and my brother did that. And I know that hurts. And he banged his gobble. He said, qualified. Thank you, Dave Lynn. Where, oh, where did my musical interlude go?
Let's go. Quiet now, quiet.
Soldiers and Nixon coming, we're finally on our own. This summer for unknown reasons as he was walking down the street in Washington. So
that was just a robbery, I believe, wasn't it?
No, there's no. Whistleblowers go to significant efforts to get us material and often very significant risks. There's a 27-year-old who works for the DNC who was shot in the back, murdered just 2 weeks ago for unknown reasons as he was walking down the street in Washington. So
that was just a robbery, I believe, wasn't it?
No, there's no finding. So
What are you suggesting?
I'm suggesting that our sources take risks, and they become concerned to see things occurring like that.
But was he one of your sources then? I mean,
we don't comment on who our sources are.
But why make the suggestion about a young guy being shot in the streets of Washington?
Because we have to understand how high the stakes are.
Well, Dave Lynn did. Lynn started working with the Peace and Freedom Party in the 80s. Okay. Hilda Rangel friend. He ran for Congress in 92 in California against a prominent Democrat at the time, winning 10,472 votes out of 238,939. Lynn also helped organize the Oakland Tenants Union and wrote for Grassroots, an independent newspaper out of Berkeley. He participated in protests against Vietnam War, Iraq War, and Nicaragua and El Salvador interventions. Lynn wasn't a pacifist. He was an activist, feminist, and a revolutionary. She said he will be missed, but his spirit inspires still. The Mouse Report finds it shocking that while the New York Times, Washington Post, CNN, etc., are all too eager to regurgitate each other's anonymously sourced stories that are critical of Trump and their Russia collaboration, basically ending our assassination campaign against socialists, not a single one of them has a single reference to this Fox News bombshell on their website at the time this article was published. I hate mentioning that crap, but where is the Fox News? Okay, according to Fox News, federal law enforcement investigators found 44,000 emails sent between DNC leaders from January 17th that Rich shared with WikiLeaks before he was gunned down on July. And so the Fox News story is that the family is saying, oh, no such thing, and what's the family's Fox News? Okay, so recent Fox News reports saying they have seen no evidence of the alleged emails between Seth Rich and Emily. As we've seen through the past year of unsubstantiated claims, we see no facts, we have seen no evidence, we have been approached with no emails and only learned about this when contacted by the press, the statement said. Oh, this is Seth Rich's family. So, even if tomorrow an email was found, it is not a high enough bar of evidence to prove any interaction, as emails can be altered, and we've seen that those interested in pushing conspiracies will stop at nothing to do so. I think they mean conspiracy theories. We are a family who is committed to facts, not fake evidence that surfaces every few months to fill the void and distract law enforcement and the general public from finding Seth's murderers. The services of the private investigator who spoke to the press was offered to the Rich family and paid for by a third party and contractually was barred from speaking to press or anyone outside of law enforcement or the family unless explicitly authorized by the family, unquote. So that was the Fox News release just recently. Let me see what day. So you don't have to according to Fox, well, it doesn't say when, but this was May 16th, so that's like today or something. But even though this, none of these stories are mentioning this families protesting that is carried in the Fox News, and even though they all regurgitate it, because of course it goes to the okay, I'll start at the top. For the past several months, Democrats have based their Resist 45 movement on unsubstantiated assertions that the Trump campaign coordinated with Russian intelligence officials to undermine the 2016 presidential election, thereby stealing the White House from Hillary Clinton. Of course, in reality, Mouse Report listeners know that the deep state, or whatever, amounts to dove us into the human cesspool of Trump to dodge the Clinton death squad bullets that were getting unraveled by the Wienergate, the Pedogate. When you share your chief of staff, whom Abedin shares her emails with ex-John Wiener, and John Wiener is sexting 50-year-olds, and Comey is looking the other way for weeks in the middle of Pedogate. Okay, then why would I not call it Pizzagate? Because that's what the gun-clutching racist little dicks are calling it. And they don't like the government for the good things it did. Miles does not like the government for the bad things it did. Let me go. I always did it better last time. So, here we go. Panthers in Oakland. What? Okay. But. Oh. Oh.
The country is crying for the Occupy movement.
This morning, the rain on the Occupy Oakland camp.
This morning, the rain on the Occupy Oakland camp.
Was a test.
Was a test.
How the community would react.
I'm proud to see
We said, what about our brothers and sisters? fighting against the same imperial empire in South Africa. We said we formed a coalition with the PAC. And we said, what about in Zimbabwe? We formed a coalition with ZANU. And what about in Mozambique? We formed a coalition with Frelimo. Now, I say all that to say that one of the things that the Occupy movement has inspired me is that it has reached beyond the question of one group versus another. We don't have any conflict. We know who the common enemy is. And that enemy you have identified in language that everyone around the world now identifies with, and that's the 1%.
Yeah.
We understand one thing, that the rest of us are the 99%. So the question is, what are we going to do and where do we go from here? And I want to remind you of something that made you who you are and us who we are as I joined in and gave my voice to what you already started in Oakland. Glad to walk the clothes down the port of Oakland. Tell me they lost $4 to $8 million that day. I was like, oh, you had $8 million? That's it, that $8 million right now. We won't close nothing down if we start having some profit sharing and some redistribution of wealth around here. But yes, let's shut it down every day that we're not getting a dime out of that. Five schools closing only need $2 million to reopen and they make $8 million a day. Give me a break. So what has the Occupy movement done? It's done what
My check. I have an announcement. If anybody has something to say in order to keep things organized, please make an announcement on this microphone.
Everybody, we meet at Oscar Grant Plaza tonight at 10 p.m. Meet us back at Oscar Grant Plaza at 10 p.m.
Maybe strategically there were a few mistakes made, and maybe we could have held in line better, we could talk about strategies. But I love taking over that building. That used to be the Oakland Auditorium, and we used to have a whole lot of things going on in Oakland Auditorium. The bottom line is this. People said, oh, look, the occupied people are violent. This in the face of talking about bringing every troop in the world down on people just because of the nonviolent protest against the Port of Oakland and its wealth and house and its exploitation. I watched a young girl on a bicycle get mowed down by the police. Yep. And I watched a black cop and a woman cop, and I asked both of them, I said, how the hell do you stand up here when we done fought for you, for women's liberation and black liberation, and this is what you did with it? Mm-hmm. I said, you're not my brother, you're not my sister. So we have to be clear about what we're doing and not be afraid or ashamed to say, oh, well, we're not violent, we have to explain, we don't have anything to explain. We're doing the right thing. All I want to say to you now in closing is that I'm a part of you, and you, I feel a part of this movement. I know I talk to different people around the country who've been in the movement many years, and some of us who were tired of being alive and thought it was all over, but the shouting, and then came the shouting, and then came Occupy. It gave us and reinvigorated us. I didn't have any problem. I'll be 70 in March. I walked like I was 12 years old walking around there to close that damn port. Guys are leaders. You can bring other people into this, but the way we're going to do that is you're going to have to take some actions again. That doesn't mean we get killed. It doesn't mean we get beat up. We have to find some better actions and some more strategic actions. But the bottom line is that's who you have become. You've got your, the world is recognized. The world is recognized Occupy Oakland specifically. So we'll be proud.
Global.
Let's say, let's join together. Let's keep this going, and let's remember the power belongs to the people. All power to the people. Yeah.
Is that Occupy? Or Panthers in Oakland? That's our occupant, Lane Brown.
And I arranged for this one taxi driver colleague who knew Strouser very well. To jump in the back of his cab, this is Nathan Whitlock, jump in the back of his cab and say, boy, I understand Pepper's got enough to put you away and that they're going to charge you on this King case. Just put that right out there following the interview session I had with him. And Strouser's immediate response was, what are they going to get me for something I did 30 years ago? And then he stopped and said, or heard about. You know? Mm-hmm. So
right.
So Nathan caught him in at that sensitive, critical period of time.
Yeah, it's totally incredible. And then when you, say you've someone else has ID'd him as the shooter, He through the rest of the interview with you, he never says no or what or bullshit or all he keeps saying is, I don't know why he would say that. So it struck me as just crazy that he would never say, that's ridiculous.
Yeah. The thing I find most interesting about the meeting with Strouser was the size of his shoes.
Right.
Because we had as evidence two Plaster of Paris casts of the shoes that we believed were the shoes, the cast of the shoes of the shooter as he was going back away from the scene, from the wall, because it had rained heavily the night before. And they were size 13 cast shoes. And when I asked him the size of his shoes, he gave me a slight grin and said, 13 large. He didn't even think of denying it, you know. He had he fit right in with the question.
Right, and also, although it doesn't look good for him, he couldn't help but brag about how he used to be an amazing shooter. He couldn't help but brag there. So I want to back up for a minute and go to one other piece of the book that really shocked me. Was there's a part where you bring up Daniel Ellsberg, for people that don't know, the man who leaked the Pentagon Papers in 1971, and most people view him as one of the most
noble and trustworthy sources out there, and he signed an affidavit back in the 70s saying that he was told by Brady Tyson, an aide of the UN ambassador Andrew Young, that they had said they were pretty sure they knew who killed King, and it was FBI officers working under J. Edgar Hoover. Talk a little about Ellsberg and also about how you think this is connected to Hoover.
Well, there's no doubt that from what the evidence that we've uncovered and I put forward in the plot to kill King, that Hoover was a very key player in the assassination of Martin Luther King. But he didn't come in by himself. He sent Clyde Tolson in all the time. Tolson carried out all of Hoover's wishes with respect to the Dixie Mafia group, who were the group on the ground who were responsible for carrying out the operation of the assassination. And Tolson would come in, and he would bring money, and he would bring instructions, and he even went on two overseas trips, private trips, with Russell Atkins, who was the father, the godfather, if you will, of the Dixie Mafia group. And Russell Atkins' son, Ron Tyler Atkins, as you know, if you read The Plot to Kill King, became a major witness for us because I deposed him over 2 days. And under oath, he just revealed so much information that was staggering. And it, of course, it involved Tolson and money that came from Hoover. And what was most surprising to me was the fact that they broke James Earl Ray out of prison. That he had been profiled as an ideal patsy, and once that had been done in late 1967, Hoover sent in with Tolson $25,000 that Tolson gave to Atkins, that Atkins, along with his son, went to the prison and gave to the warden. And the job was, of course, to allow James Earl Ray to escape. And to fix his escape, which they did. James never knew this. He never knew that his escape was arranged and that he was being set up at that earliest stage in 67. They brought the money in and set the thing up in 66, and James was allowed to escape in April of 1967. So, but James didn't know this. But the Hoover involvement was critical. He obviously, from what we learned, had used this Dixie Mafia family, who related to the large mafia organization of Carlos Marcello. They used them for a lot of local work that had to be done. And we didn't get into that whole history, but we really focused on the extent to which they were useful in planning the assassination of Martin King.
And speaking of setting James Earl Ray up, he insisted there was a man who he only knew as Raul, who kind of led him around for months, and he did jobs for him, gun running, and he got Ray fake IDs. And your belief is that Raul was setting Ray up to be the fall guy. Now, the official story is that Raul never existed. It was something Ray invented in his mind. Explain how you know that Raul is a real person and who you believe it is.
Well, Raul Coelho was his name. Raul Coelho died, and he lived up on Alta Vista Avenue in Yonkers, New York. And he was an immigrant from Portugal. And in his history, he had been involved with Portuguese intelligence and overseas operations in Angola and Africa. So he was a fairly sophisticated guy, was brought in prior to the John Kennedy assassination. Now, we had five photographs of people whom we showed who had the capability of identifying Raul. Excuse me. And the Raul was in the spread of five. James never identified anyone on a photograph as Raul, but this one he did. There's no question about it. And when we sent an investigator to Raul's house, knocked on the door, and his daughter answered and showed she was shown this photograph of her father and said he's been identified as a man who handled and was James Earl Ray and was a facilitator of the assassination of Martin Luther King. She was nonplussed, and she said, no, that couldn't be. And anyway, anyone could get that picture of my father. Anyone. But she was effectively identifying the photograph as being that of her father. Now, along the road also, a woman named Grabo came forward, and she was able to put a good deal of flesh on the bones with respect to Raul and who he was and what he was involved in. And so we had no question over a period of time that this man existed. Then we had a British merchant seaman who was approached by Raoul in Montreal in the same bar that James was in when he had escaped and he was trying to get out of the country. And in that bar, this fellow, this merchant seaman, remembered being approached by this exact fellow, and he identified the photograph, and talking to him. So there was no question that he was there in the bar where James said he met him near the docks of Montreal on West Commissioner Street, where he was trying to get travel papers and get out of North America.
Right. So you had multiple witnesses where you showed them the five or six photos of various people, and they all say that's Raul. I want to switch for a second to the other special ops units that were on the roofs roofs that day during the assassination. Why, and you found various witnesses to attest to that. Why were they up there if they weren't the ones taking the shot?
Well, they were up there to photograph everything and everyone who was in the area. And there were two cameramen who were put up there by the captain of the fire station, who also testified and gave the statement under oath. There was no question about it. They showed military credentials, and they were put up there. And I believe that they were there. They were put up by John Downey, who was the head of the 902nd Military Intelligence Group. And Downey coordinated a good deal of the backup military activity. It was Downey who chose the two military snipers, special ops guys, who were at two different spots and were prepared to take out Martin King, and, as it turned out, Andrew Young was a target as well. So Downey wanted to get the complete photographic picture of everyone who was around there in case there was anyone who might have seen something he or she shouldn't have seen. That's my view why they were there. And they photographed the balcony, they photographed the whole parking lot area, and they photographed the bushes from where the shot came. And they photographed the shooter lowering the rifle. Now, one of my investigators, a former naval intelligence guy, was able to interview them, and it was made quite clear to him that the shooter they'd seen putting down the rifle was not James Earl Ray.
Yeah, and the bushes you just mentioned were all chopped down and cleared away the following morning as if they'd never been there. Throughout your many decades on this story, you've been attacked in the mainstream media when they aren't busy ignoring the story completely. Snopes claim that the mainstream media did cover the 1999 civil trial, but in fact, they can only point to one New York Times article that was basically buried in the Times. So it really wasn't covered. And throughout your research, you've been attacked, you've been criticized. You state that at one point you were wearing a bulletproof vest in the courtroom. Talk a little about the hurdles you yourself have endured through these decades to get this story out.
Well, it's been a long effort, and it's kind of like a slippery slope. You know, I'm sure many investigative journalists and attorneys get involved in similar situations where you get into a case not thinking it's going to hold you for very long, or you're going to have any degree of longevity. And then the more you learn, and the more you understand about what really happened and the injustice that took place, and particularly with respect to Martin King, you have to understand, I was close to Martin only the last year of his life. He asked to meet with me following my return from Vietnam, where I, as a journalist, I eventually published in Ramparts magazine an article called The Children of Vietnam, which showed the horrors of American war crimes in Vietnam. And when Martin, who was a subscriber to Ramparts, saw that, he asked to meet with me and asked me to work with him. And we became close that last year of his life. I agreed to head the National Conference for New Politics at his request, which was to be an organization, multifaceted, multi-political, multi-ideological organization to build a third-party ticket against Lyndon Johnson. And so I had that degree of a commitment and involvement with Martin King, and I couldn't let go of it. So I went on and on. And yes, I don't need to go into threats and that were numerous and inconveniences. I mean, I moved my first family to England in 1981 because my four-year-old son ended up picking up a telephone hearing threats on his father's life. Mm-hmm. I had people across the street in a duck blind, and we lived on the water, on surveillance, and others up and down the beach. I was followed, continually. But when Sean picked up the telephone and heard the threat on his father, I said, this is no way for a child to be raised, and no way for him and for young children, and there were three, to live. So I moved the family to Cambridge, England, where I became a visiting scholar, and they were raised in England, raised and educated in England. Mm-hmm. And then I would commute back and forth. So that first family suffered a lot in the sense of my absence was fairly heavy, and it also suffered because I put funds that I would often earn from my legal practice. I became a barrister in England as well as an attorney in the United States, but I would earn money I would often earn on commercial matters. I ended up splicing off funds onto this case. And over a period of 39, 40 years, the amount of money that went out was well over $1 million.
Yeah.
So those were funds that were taken away from a family.
Yeah, and I just want to wrap up with this final question. As you said, you knew Martin Luther King Jr. for the final year of his life. And after all these years, why do you think the powers that be found him so threatening? Why did he have to be stopped in such a horrible way?
They couldn't stop him any other way. And he had such a huge sympathetic following across the country, grassroots following. And The H.L. Hunt used to meet occasionally with Hoover, and he would tell Hoover that he could take care of King through broadcasting and demean him and all of that. Hoover said, no, that'll never work. He's going to have to be taken out. I know this because H.L. Hunt's chief of staff turned over a lot of documentation and information to me. It's a very important historical fact to understand. In fact, this is a book I'm working on now, which is the history of political assassinations. Mm-hmm. So that Americans don't think that what happened to us in the 60s, to our in our republic in the 60s, is some way unique. It's important to understand that political assassinations have gone back as long as human society.
Now, the CIA is the world's most dangerously incompetent spy agency. That's what WikiLeaks editor Julian Assange has told RT after the CIA slammed him as the terrorist's best friend. The agency also claims Russian hacking of the US elections is a fact, and this channel's trying to cover it up. Well, let's cross now to Afshin Ratansi, whose show Going Underground led to this war of words. Well, hello there.
Hi there.
Hi there, Afshin. So, how did all this erupt?
Well, I should say that away from the Trump-Russian news that obviously is making the headlines in the United States, we were planning a going underground program to mark the release, the scheduled release of Chelsea Manning, the whistleblower, within the next 24 hours. And so I'm going to get there to the timeline as to how the CIA has made allegations against this channel, against Wiki.
Okay, on the screen it says, dictators and terrorists have no better friend in the world than Julian Assange, as theirs is the only privacy he protects. Oh, for Heather Fritz Horniak, CIA spokesperson.
He leaks, leading to that response from Julian Assange. The context of this, of course, is that the UK Health Service has just been hacked by some malware purportedly designed by United States agencies. And given the situation with the high tension surrounding Russia, Trump in the past 45 minutes or our Lady Gaga and Julian Assange, a video has been released, and Fox News, the Rupert Murdoch channel, has been talking about mysterious conspiracies involving a DNC staffer, Seth Rich. It was in this context that we decided to speak to Ray McGovern, who for 30 years has worked at the CIA, was responsible for presidential briefings at the White House. We spoke to this retired veteran of the CIA and asked him why he'd written a letter along with the film director Oliver Stone, the musician PJ Harvey, the linguist Noam Chomsky, demanding or asking or pleading the United States government to stop its investigations into Julian Assange, currently under arbitrary detention here in London as determined by the United Nations. Here is what Ray McGovern told us.
Julian and his WikiLeaks associates are in possession now of authentic or original CIA documents that show things like a capability that allows the CIA to hack into other systems. Could it be that the Russian hack was really done by John Brennan of the CIA?
In the United States. And that our sources are in the United States. But we have to understand how high the stakes are in the United States, and that our sources are, you know, our sources face serious risks. That's why they come to us, so we can protect their anonymity.
Right, so he cannot say who it was, unlike us, of course, the U.S.,
the unmasking of
right.
Flynn, okay?
Exactly.
And
I,
and you know, and
exactly.
You know what? Did we see that the head of the director of the FBI lift one finger?
Of course, Flynn was the head of the DIA with a paper trail naming the Salafist principality that he is in trouble with colluding with the Russians against. In other words, pulling the plug like he promised on our assassination campaign. Using the Takfiri army from hell, or in other words, the Pirates of the Potomac and the slime buckets up the Thames.
You know, to make sure that we know that, you know, some that is going to be investigated, and the person that did that's going to go to prison, because any one of us can be fall victim up to that. That I saw that hearing with Sally Yates and Clapper. I was disgusted as an American.
That reference to John Brennan, of course, President Obama's head of the CIA. Quite an allegation, and as usual on Going Underground, we asked the CIA for comment whenever we hear allegations against the CIA. That reference.
Could it be that the Russian hack was really done by John Brennan of the CIA?
That reference to John Brennan, of course, President Obama's head of the CIA. Quite an allegation, and as usual on Going Underground, we asked the CIA for comment whenever we hear allegations against the CIA. We do that as a matter of course. To date, the CIA has never given us a response. But Mike Pompeo, the new boss of the CIA under Donald Trump, perhaps he's marking a whole new era of openness, because this is what we heard from Heather Fritz Horniak, spokesperson for the Central Intelligence Agency.
The responsibility of the Russian intelligence services for the election-related hacking is an established fact, but it is not surprising that an identified propaganda outlet like RT would attempt to muddle those facts. No reputable news organization doubts Russian culpability.
This lust to rule the world, L-U-S-T, the lust to rule the world, was there in the beginning of history when Allah said to Adam alayhi salam and his wife to go and live in the garden, the Jannah, paradise. He told them, do not approach this tree, because if you approach this tree, you're going to be wicked in your conduct. And which tree was it? It wasn't a mulberry tree. No, you don't understand this literally at all.
Well, that would be scary, because, of course, we know what the tree of knowledge implies when Adam knew Eve, and this is in the midst of the garden. Oh, my. But if you eat of the seed, of course, you will be as gods, having control over volition on reproduction. In other words, you can't help but have sex, but you can keep from having children. Ow. What? Oh, God. Turn on the monitor, Dota Bird.
We bring good things to life. Can count on doing what we do best.
So the Mouse Report samples endless horror. So we're going to get the straight scoop on the one of the three heads of the Wife Beaters Union, the Abrahamic, Psychopathic Syndicate.
It has to be understood symbolically, and it was Iblis himself, Satan himself, who did the interpretation for us, and impacting upon the electorate in France.
To believe in the devil is to be the devil. Now, the Yazidi's devil is, you know, like you get called a little devil, well, it's the coyote trickster, so... Never mind, I'm just playing this to get the formal repudiation of Wahhabism, because, you know, the West's always saying, and, he's going to talk about the Eastern Church, and, well, it's like in Damascus, you know, the 10,000-year-old city, gringos and gringas are paying to try to destroy. They have mosques next to synagogues, next to church. And so here we repudiate the West's Takfiri army.
And in Belgium and in Germany and other places. And therefore the oppressors of the world are probably in a state of panic now. That their brainwashing machine is no longer working as it used to work before. That's my first comment on the election of Trump. It's a hopeful sign for me. That does not mean that I'm endorsing Mr. Trump, but I'm saying that those who have a little bit of common sense in their head and a little bit of integrity in their head will recognize that a substantial proportion of the American electorate resisted the brainwashing of the media. And I'm perfectly correct in that advice.
Yes, sir.
My second government had the favorite of the media being elected, Clinton had become had won the election, then you don't need much. you just need a few cents of intelligence to recognize that the world would have been facing nuclear war right away. But on the contrary, with the election of Trump, we now have the possibility of averting nuclear war for some time. I don't think it's going to be for long, because they want the nuclear, they're lusting for nuclear war.
Now, I had a very good This Can't Be Happening blog that talked about Trump can't assassinate the head of Korea as, you know, like sending the fleet there, inviting various WMDs, but the point of Lindorf's column was that this executive order prohibiting it, but that's bullshit. Of course, the president can repeal previous executive order, but that executive order was distract from the fact Congress had outlawed assassination of their counterparts. Never mind that fucking White House Nazi pig mother F from hell. Their counterparts are prohibited from targeting because that keeps them off the target, because that's the way treaties and things go. So, blah, 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 blah.
The oppressors of the world. They're lusting for nuclear war against Russia and against China.
But in all those cases, and Syria, and Libya, and Iraq, and Afghanistan, there is a mayor, there is a dog catcher, there is a janitor in the building you are targeting that makes you a fugitive for life. That's 1116, 1117. We want the janitors in the White House protected. You can't say executive orders outlaw assassination when it was already assassinated with 1116 or Title 18. Conspiracy to murder is Title 18, Section 1117, and it specifically says that violation of 1116 shall be included.
Blah, 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 blah.
But the election of Trump, who is a president-elect, you know, the president, we see the possibility that nuclear war with Russia can be averted for a while. He has very sensible views pertaining to American relations with Russia. My last comment is that the oppressors of the world must be in such a state of panic that there is the possibility that they may seek to provoke the war with Russia before January 20th, before Trump actually becomes the president.
Old news. Well.
And then he will then be faced with a fait accompli.
That's the CIA accusing the channel viewers are watching right now of being a propaganda outlet, and that it's a fact. We've got to remember that the CIA has decades of experience, famous Operation Mockingbird, of infiltrating media in the United States and in NATO nations, of skewing the news so that populations in NATO nations did not understand the elements of the Cold War playing out with their taxpayer money. Quite an allegation. RT will no doubt make a response to what the CIA is alleging there. As to the allegations against WikiLeaks, they don't like him much either.
The CIA is the world's most dangerously incompetent spy agency. It has armed terrorists, destroyed democracies, and installed and maintained dictatorships the world over. There are good men and women at the CIA, but if our publications are any guide, they work for WikiLeaks.
That was Julian Assange's response to the CIA criticizing Julian Assange for being a friend of dictators. So here we have WikiLeaks in an open war of words with the CIA. Donald Trump on the record for saying, on the one hand, we love WikiLeaks, and on the other, that Chelsea Manning was a traitor whose sentence should never have been commuted by outgoing U.S. President Obama. So, at the moment, all we know is the CIA do not like RT, do not like WikiLeaks, and are certainly being more open about it.
Yes, it's certainly being an interesting week. Ashley Redanzi, host of Going Underground. Thank you very much.
What happens ordinarily is that if an individual
who has a power base. And the two roads to power, remember, are money and numbers. An individual has a power base of a following and cannot be compromised, cannot be co-opted in some way. Then at the only road open, that's left open very often for the ruling forces of a society to get rid of that person, is assassination. And that has been used throughout history. The plot to kill King is it encompasses all of the statements under oath, all of the information, all of the everything that was necessary to back up everything that we say about the assassination of Martin King, who was not, by the way, and I'm sure you know if you read the book, was not killed by the shooter as he stood on the balcony, but was instead assassinated in the emergency room of the hospital.
Yeah, we didn't even have time to get into that, but you go into great detail in the book about the fact that he was still alive when he arrived at the hospital, and it took the work or lack thereof of doctors to allow him to die.
The doctor who pulled out the catheters, chased everybody to the emergency room, and put the pillow over his face and suffocated him, and we have eyewitness testimony with respect to that under oath. That doctor was the head of neurosurgery in the hospital and was also the family doctor for the Adkins Dixie Mafia family, and had said some weeks earlier in front of Russ Adkins' son, just be sure you get him to St. Joseph's Hospital if he isn't killed by the bullet, and we will make sure he doesn't leave alive.
Well, truly, truly horrifying, but still getting the truth out there is so important. And thank you, Dr. Bill Pepper, for...
The heartbeat of America.
He seems to have already done
These
that.
These are my initial comments. Hello?
Yes, he seems to have already done that in the sense that Turkish troops are in Syria, and Erdogan has announced that their purpose is to overthrow the Syrian government.
Yeah, we never trusted him. He's not a man to be trusted at all. He's a favored son of NATO, and he pretends to be otherwise. He boasted and he gloated over the fall of the Libyan government. Now NATO is in Libya. And I say shame on Erdogan and shame on Turkey. I have no qualms at all in condemning Erdogan and Turkey for what they did in Libya. What they have done in Syria is even worse. Thousands, hundreds of thousands of people have suffered tremendously because of Turkey's participation with Saudi Arabia and the CIA in this covert attempt to overthrow the Syrian, the legitimate Syrian government. And so we condemn him, and he's not a man to be trusted. And what they had in Turkey was not a legitimate attempt at a coup at all. I believe it was all fake, staged marriage, to give Erdogan an opportunity to
to do what he's done in Turkey and what he's been doing in Syria.
Okay.
DJ Mouse belongs to the Church of the Great No-No, whoever dips their tongue in that honey well will surely die with a smile. So that's the story of the, I segued from the Genesis, the tree, obviously in the midst of the garden, the tree of knowledge would be the male penis. The seed of that tree, of course, gives, eating the seed gives you birth control, obviously, which a shepherd is not going to allow. And if you're going to be a sheep, well, welcome to that three-headed dog guarding hell, the wife beaters union, because the tenth, I mean, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife does not say, or husband, you know, that our mother who is of the earth is amputated from the Lord's prayer. It's just our Father who art in heaven. And just like Genghis Khan, had restored the matriarchal heavens, the amputated by all the warrior cultures that he was part of, because his mother was thrown out, just like Ishmael, into the wilderness to survive, and so he had that respect that Lord Bob from Rad's Place chased Andy Balsa out the house.
Retreat from this world, and retreat is out of the cities and into the countryside, and the more remote you can go into the countryside, the safer you would be. This philosophy of withdrawal for the purpose of the preservation of faith and the values has come about in consequence of our perception that the world today is rotting from the perspective of religion and from the perspective of morality.
Indeed it is. In a sense, these Muslim villages or multi-confessional traditional villages might perform a function a little bit like that of monasteries during the European Dark Ages that preserved what culture was there in a kind of a rural setting, and the people there had to kind of provide for themselves. Is that a good analogy?
Yes, I believe that the Muslim village in which you have a monastery, a Christian monastery, and a Christian church, and a Muslim masjid, and a Jewish synagogue, all in the same village, and establishing fraternal relations with each other would send a message to the rest of the world that this brainwashing that is coming from the enemy should be resisted, because here is a concrete example of an interreligious harmony and fraternity based on the common premise that we want to preserve religious values and we want to preserve moral values. But there's one more thing, and that is that at the heart of true religion, at the heart of Orthodox Christianity, at the heart of true Judaism, and at the heart of the true religion of Islam, there's zero tolerance for oppression. And so the Muslim village and the Christian village and the Jewish village, when they come together, have no place at all for the oppressor. The Christian oppressor, the Jewish oppressor, the supporter of the State of Israel, and the oppressor among the Muslims, who are like the Saudi regime and so on, they don't have any place at all in the Muslim village. The Muslim village has to be a place where people would resist oppression, resist the oppressor, and would long for the day when they can liberate the oppressed.
Well, it seems that this vision of Muslims and Christians and Jews living peacefully together, worshiping God in a traditional village, is kind of the exact opposite of the image that the media keeps promoting of Islam in the form of so-called Islamic State or Daesh, where they want to ethnically cleanse and, you know, just get rid of, kill or expel, and just not tolerate the presence of not only most Christians and Zoroastrians and Jews and unbelievers of all kinds, but also most Muslims who have different interpretations of Islam from theirs. Would you say that this Islam...
There are lots of Muslims who have the wrong view of Pax Islamica, that Islam has come into the world to rule the world, which is rubbish with a capital R. Allah never sent the religion of Islam in the world to rule the world, not at all. In fact, this lust to rule the world, L-U-S-T, the lust to rule the world, was there in the beginning of history.
And this would be in the middle, but today, 10 points down the dial from 104.1 FM, liberationradio.info. The same big lie was swallowed whole and spit in our face again from drone bombers pushing him to bomb Damascus, 10,000-year-old city. So this morning, the Poppy Bush babies on Dixiocracy Now were selling us the Contra war on Syria, reminding me of Norris Lawyer Green in the Iran-Contra scandal, screaming like the bad witch in Oz, splashed with water when Senator Inouye invoked Nuremberg. But the assassination campaign was gotten in trouble, I think, by, And of course, the Washington Post, New York Times, all those guys pushing the Contra war were the bad Russia, the bad Russians bad Russians versus the Frack 3/5 U.S. black box voters story. they don't mention the Seth Rich story that's in Fox News this week. So how can they not mention some major outlet like Rupert Murdoch, Asian Tobacco, pushing this family is protesting? No, 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 Seth Rich had nothing to do with WikiLeaks, too much, protesting too much, and then not even get noticed by their other regurgitating the big lie, spit in our face, again, just like under drone bombing, but... But there was one last little gobble of the week. Bratton, Stop and Frisk Bratton, who stopped by Oakland to collect a $250,000 tribute. Of course, a $250,000 is what the local cops were making 10 years ago when we had our brains blown out in the form of Oakland Post editor Chauncey Bailey for covering that story, shaking down black clubs with inflated crime statistics. If you were to go back to the Miles Report, you will find this is a common practice. PCP is routinely labeled in hospitals, so the SF General Hospital and the SFPD collude in inflating crime statistics. Over here, it was black clubs requiring half a dozen off-duty cops. That's how you get $250,000 a year. That's what they gave Bratton. He's going to move up to New York. Excuse me. He's known as Stop and Frisk Bratton, I think, from, wherever the hell it was. He's going to be FEMA, and that's Luis Jofrida graduating under Reagan from state to federal with that. Expansionist whites in the quest for power have stolen this land, incarcerated the inhabitants for the last couple centuries. Only by understanding illegitimate violence has its roots and causes of social injustice can you do your job. Which is not to eliminate violence, it's necessary to give you an excuse to use your violence. This is all the strategy attention Mayor Lonnie of Master Bates' infamy was going to the CSTI, who was, of course, conveniently out of town when we got the rubber bullet shot in the back. Business, but.
There's a front row seat for the precious few. The latest war as a pay-per-view. Famine and disaster right in front.